Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Onceful episode 73. I'm Brittany, and tonight we're going to talk about Once Upon a Time, season 5, episode 4, The Broken Kingdom. And today we have Karen, Kristen, and Jen. Hello, ladies.
Hey.
Hi.
So they're all here, and we have a Twitter announcement. We have found all of the passwords to all of the Twitters, and we now have one Twitter. It's all combined into one beautiful Twitter. So it's at Onceable. You can reach us. You can comment to us. I saw that we have months and months and months and months of mentions that were like about the episode. So I'm sorry. Please start tweeting us now because I can see them and respond to them. There's a lot of really good thoughts out there, and one of them sent me on a huge timeline mission today that I still have yet to solve. So that was fun. But yeah, I'm happy that people were tweeting at us, and I'm sorry we didn't see them for about 3 years, because I think the last tweet from the Onceable account was in 2012.
Oh my gosh.
So sorry we weren't ignoring you. We literally just didn't have the password. Yeah, so tweet us there, comment on this post, and yeah, we'll be checking them now. So that could be a new thing that we do. So let's talk about The Broken Kingdom. What was our instant reaction? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Let's start with Karen.
I really liked this episode, actually. I thought that it was so quotable, and I had a lot of trouble picking my favorite quote, but I stand by my decision. And it was really nice seeing Charming and Snow working together the way that they did. I was really worried about where they were going to take that plot line, but I'm 100% happy with it.
Awesome. And Kristen, what did you think?
I also really enjoyed it. Again, I too loved all of the Snow and Charming drama. It was good fun, especially Wet by the end. I just really thought it was a really well done episode, and who can't love the whole Hook and Henry scene? I mean, I know we'll go there, but it was so great. So, yeah, I loved it.
Awesome. Jen, what'd you think?
I thought it was a really good episode as well. I enjoyed most parts of it. I really liked getting to see the stuff with Arthur and kind of to reveal who he truly is. That was probably some of my favorite stuff because we all kind of knew that he was diabolical in a way. I don't think we realized how ridiculous he was. So I liked that reveal a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a thumb sideways, possibly because I'm making up because Laura's not here and she probably would have given this a thumbs down because she doesn't like Arthur. But also because I was kind of like, throughout the whole episode, mainly because I think I was kind of not okay with where they were going at the beginning. I was like, I don't want Snow and Charming pitted against each other. Like, and they're creating this other unredeemable character. But by the end, I felt okay about it, but I just had such a negative opinion of it going into it that I was pleasantly surprised by the end, but not enough for me to be like okay with the whole episode, if that makes sense. But there, like Karen was saying, this was a very quotable episode, so let's get to some of our favorite quotes. Karen, I'll let you go first.
Okay, mine was a really simple one, and it's near the end when Charming shows up, which I was like cheering when that happened. And they, you know, the whole fight, or well, most of it was staged, the whole like them separating and kind of pitting against each other. And I don't remember if it was Lancelot who asked it, but Snow just goes, oh, the fight was real. And she kind of looks at David and is like, and you can just tell that things are a little bitter, but in the end they worked it out and he came to his senses, which I'm so glad about. And yeah, it was so funny.
That was a good, that whole ending scene was actually very good. And Kristen, what was yours? I really love this quote. This was my second choice.
Mine's from Regina, and it's a beautiful, perfect Regina quote, because the minute she said it, I was like, oh my God, that's exactly who she is. Like, it's fabulous. It was when she said, "I get antsy when I don't know who to hate." And I just remember, like, cracking up hysterically as soon as she said it. I was like, oh my God, this is great. So yeah, little Regina love.
Yeah, especially since she didn't have like a huge, huge role this episode, and she just gets those one-liners, and it's so good. And mine was from a scene that Kristen mentioned earlier, when Henry, Hook, and Emma are off in the stable, and Emma goes, "Yes, he has a crush, and he straight up lied to my face, and I'm the dark one." And Hook goes, "You're his mother." And then Emma's like, "Which is scarier?" And Hook said, "To him, that's up for debate." Because not only does he have to like hide something from his mom, but his mom is the dark one right now. So, yeah, I love that whole scene as well with Hook, because it was just a nice break from the very Arthur-heavy episode. And Jen, what was your favorite?
Well, I would like mine to be all of the faces that Hook made during the scene you just mentioned, because I was dying with like the looks on his face, because he's just
his
like
eyebrows
smirking.
Do so much.
Yeah, it was like facial gymnastics. It was out of control.
That but, little like, perma smirk that he had. Just
oh God, it was so good, because Emma's like, "What?" And Henry's like trying to play it off, and Hook is just like smiling like an idiot, and I loved it. But the quote I chose to go with was when David finally redeems himself and shows that he was not playing a fool. It said, "You tried to trick me with a catchy title and a comfy chair." I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah. In reference to his special chair that he got at the round table.
Yeah, that was a good one too.
Also so gratifying that David didn't fall for it.
Yeah, because I was a little concerned for a while.
Yeah, that's where most of my, like, my problems came from. I'm like, don't give David, like, this story arc and then have him just become an idiot from it. I'm like, let him, like, you know, grow as a person a little bit. I mean, we still have Storybrooke to deal with, that David kind of falling for the buddy-buddy of Arthur, but at least it's resolved already in Camelot.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time in Camelot this episode. It was Camelot, like, present day, meaning 6 weeks ago Camelot, and then it's Camelot 5 years ago. Oh, I wrote Storybrooke. That's wrong. But, yeah, it's Camelot 5 years ago and longer. So, like, five, and then it goes all the way back to when Arthur was a kid at some points as well. So we kind of start in the more present-ish time, and this is the scene that Karen was talking about, where David and Mary Margaret are kind of fighting over, like, who's right? Is Lancelot right, or is Arthur right? And so my first question is, like, how long did you think that David was going to go with Arthur? Because I thought it was happening for far too long, especially when he brought him the dagger and everything like that. But what were your guys' initial reactions to that? Like, were you thinking that David was going to stick with Arthur?
Oh, yeah, I definitely did, which made me feel bad because, like, David's not stupid, you know, and I think my issue is, like, he's got a really good heart, and sometimes that makes him see the best in people. And with Arthur, you shouldn't be looking for the best in people. But I was getting really frustrated with him, and I kept just being like, "Listen to your wife, listen to your wife. She knows what's up." And, so yeah, it definitely strung me along until the end. And then, you know, even though it was kind of annoying, I think that reveal that they were in on it together was really worth it. It kind of paid off for me in the end.
Yeah, that's where I mean, I felt happy, like I was happy that they went there with the reveal and everything. But yeah, I'm with you. I fell for it for a long time, and I was just like, David, like, stop trying to take these big actions. I'm like, I was so happy that he was Mr. like going for everything and wanting to go on a quest and do everything last week. And this episode, I was like, whoa, we need to slow down here just a little bit. Take a deep breath. Why would you ever hand over the dagger? And then when the dagger wasn't there, I was like, okay, great. Thank God. Because then I was also confused, because I guess the dagger was only cursed to keep Emma away from it. because for a while when Snow shows up and has the dagger, I was like, wait a minute, how could you touch that? But maybe it only repelled the Dark One. And anyway, it turned out to be fake. But yeah, I definitely fell for it. So Mary Margaret kind of teams up with Lancelot and goes off on their own little adventure. And she tells him, like, oh, we're going to hide the dagger. Is that what she says? They're going to go hide the dagger from Arthur? I don't remember.
Yeah.
I thought that was the point of their mission.
Yeah, that was.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure because there's so many daggers and non-daggers and sand that it's hard to keep track of who's doing what. So yeah, she tells Lancelot that, hey, we're going to go and hide this dagger. Now, Lancelot, in this particular moment with Mary Margaret, how much do you think he was in on the plan to where the dagger was going to be fake and they were luring Arthur? Do you think that she told him everything, or do you think she kind of kept Lancelot in the dark and sort of took some of David's advice, like, we can't really trust him?
I think she kept him in the dark, like, just at the end there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember him, like, it looked like he was out of the loop, so I'm pretty sure that they kept it close to the vest and was like, you know, this is a need to know basis kind of thing. And I think they just figured they'd fill Lancelot in later. Plus, it kind of served as like a bit of a test to kind of see where Lancelot, like, where he really was, like, what was his whole purpose in all of this? So.
Yeah, that was the sense that I got as well, especially when they wound up, like, when they eventually lured Arthur to where they wanted to be. I thought that was, like, that moment was where I was like, oh, I don't think Lancelot knows as much as he thinks he does with what Mary Margaret's up to, especially when David showed up. I thought that was interesting. But yeah, so they go and they kind of lure Arthur away. I mean, there's a lot that happens in the past, so we kind of learn all of this while they're on this adventure, but ultimately they lure Arthur into a trap and they kind of end up being trapped themselves because Arthur has this sand that he got from Guinevere. So let's actually jump to 5 years ago because it's not worth trying to solve the present without the past. I'm trying to do it, but it's not going to work. There's too many moving parts to this episode. So we kind of flash back in the beginning of the episode really, really long ago. Arthur is like a preteen hanging out with preteen Guinevere. And he says that, you know, Merlin gave this prophecy. I'm going to be a great king. So from for a very long time, this seed has been festering in his head to the point of like total self-consumption by the time we catch up with Arthur in the more present day. So he has had this whole plan of how he's going to be the greatest king for a very long time. And so when he gets the sword and it's incomplete, it like just takes over his whole life. So we kind of see him spiral out of control, which I really liked because it sort of gave this whole other layer to his marriage and to the kingdom and what's really been going on before we got there. So you kind of see him like in this little hut with like everything, like all these papers strewn about, and he's like freaking out and he's trying to connect all these symbols and everything. And so what did you guys think of seeing how crazy Arthur was really about this?
I feel like Arthur is a little bit delusional and a little bit obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot obsessive.
A lot,
like,
obsessive.
I was like a little obsessive.
I know. Sorry. I was trying to play it light. Like unhealthy obsessive about this. So I just want to know where he gets the idea that he's supposed to be king, because even in the clip when Arthur's a child, we see that the tree is there that has Merlin in it. So who's filling Arthur's head with this information that he is to be king and Guinevere is to be his queen? Like, where does it all come from?
Well, I think the initial prophecy was like, you're going to pull the sword, like only a worthy king can pull the sword out of the stone. And I think he sort of got it in his head, like, that's going to be me.
Well, and I think he said Merlin spoke to him.
Yeah, so maybe he did before he became the tree.
I think the tree Merlin
spoke to him.
Yeah, okay, so sent
this
him
is
a message.
Where I start to get really, like,
Did somebody eat a mushroom and talk to Merlin?
I don't know. It's just really odd that there's only ever been a tree Merlin, that there was never a person Merlin in Arthur's life for him to get this information from. I almost feel like he's being manipulated by someone.
And if you think about it, Arthur, the age that he is now, like, he's older than Emma. So Merlin would have had to, like, been able to cross realms at some point before he became a tree to tell Emma not to take the sword from the stone. That's not even the timeline issue I was concerned about, but it's added to the list.
Right. So it's just really odd. But I guess if you can, you can jump worlds, you can jump times. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
We've seen them do it. So it's possible that he jumped to Emma at a different point in time than when he was in, before he became, you know what I mean? Before he became free.
Between realms, like, that's those timelines I never really concern myself with.
Right.
Like, this, the issue I have happens within one realm. So
right.
It gets a problem. I don't know how time passes in the Enchanted Forest.
I have no idea either, but everyone stays young and pretty forever.
I know. They have to, like, grow up from a child to that age at some point. Even if they stay that age for, like, hundreds of years.
Exactly. I don't know. I just think that, I don't know, I really don't like Arthur. I think he's so beyond delusional, and he's dangerous. His delusions make him dangerous, so.
This actually kind of concerns me, and I want to ask your opinions about it, because obviously the Arthur we know is this, like, he's, like, the hero of heroes. And the fact that they're changing his story so completely, I think our power just went out. Are you in the dark, Kristen?
Yes, I am.
God
but
damn
if
it.
The internet's still on, it means that we just blew the breaker again.
Awesome. All right. Let's just keep going.
Yeah, because the internet's still working, so that all we did was blow a breaker.
Nice. I love this house.
We know how to fix it. It's okay.
We have no heat, by the way, and it was like 55 inside today, so.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 55. Do you know how cold it is here? There were snowflakes yesterday.
Well, do you have heat?
Like, it got to 38 last night, but it's been 55 in the house all day.
So what do you think about Arthur? Tell me. Go.
Okay. I'm just concerned because they're changing so much of his story, and, I mean, clearly we want to like him. He's Arthur. So, do you think that he's ever going to be redeemed?
I hope not.
No.
Because I'm already having so many problems with them trying to redeem Rumpelstiltskin that if they attempt to do that, I feel like it's a blow not to Arthur's character, but to every single other character who is surrounded with them. Like, go ahead.
I think they've set him up to be irredeemable
mm-hmm.
because of what he did to Guinevere, because of what he clearly did to Lancelot after he doused Guinevere in the whatever powder to fix her. Then after that is when the whole thing with Lancelot went down. So, like, clearly he's done a lot that's made him more, you know, less of the Arthur we all know from, you know, legend and whatnot, and more the villain of the story. Kind of like Peter Pan has always been the really nice little boy, and in the story we got, Peter Pan was the big bad. So I don't think he's going to be redeemed.
For some reason, that just really bothers me. Like, I mean, Peter Pan was the bad guy, and I was so into it. Like, I loved the idea that they changed it. But for some weird reason, and if somebody could maybe explain it to me, that would be fantastic. But I'm really kind of upset that they're taking Arthur in this direction.
Well, I think if you think about it, Arthur has always been this very idealistic character. He is the good. He creates all men, you know, being equal, that no one's ahead of the other. That's why he has a round table. And he's always been very, like, proper and good to the core. So by taking Arthur and making Camelot a sham in a lot of ways, let's face it, it's based on powder, like magical sand that makes everything look great. I think that kind of ruins your idea of what Camelot and Arthur are in this story. And that's probably why it's difficult to accept, because in your mind, you have this picture of who Arthur is, the storyline you expect from Arthur. And this is completely not it. This is something so vastly different from everything that you know about Arthur. You know, I mean, they've mm-hmm. kept the Guinevere and Lancelot thing, but what they've done is they've really made it Arthur's fault in a way.
Yeah, and I think that it's a good contrast between having this character be such an extreme, and then you can look back at Rumple and think like, okay, well, he wasn't always the Dark One. He had a family that kind of grounded him. He does love, like, there are people in his life who kind of try to change him. Whereas Arthur, if someone tries to change him, he changes them before they can do it. Like, there's zero compassion underlying anything here. Like, he was willing to throw the first his love under the bus, like, and that was it. She was done with him. He doesn't really have a family. He's kind of he was came from poor surroundings. Like, nothing is grounding this guy in reality. He's just power hungry. And I mean, I like that they're changing the story. He's not Mr. High and Mighty, but I also didn't really know that much about King Arthur except from the Sword in the Stone, which was the cute little boy who pulled the sword from the stone. So, I mean, I'm a blank slate. You can give me whatever you want for this story. But it's interesting, Karen, that you are really bothered by it, because I think a lot of people would be who know the story and they don't want to see their character treated like that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know what listeners think if they like the fact that they twisted the tale, which is what Once Upon a Time usually does, or if they feel like betrayed like I do, which is weird because I'm not a huge Arthur fan. Like, I don't even really know a lot about the lore. I think I'm just, you have that idea of Arthur in your head, and it's such a popular story. Such an old story too, that the fact that they're changing it so much is just weird to me.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly interesting. But they one thing they really didn't kind of play around with is the fact that Lancelot is really crushing on Guinevere quite hard as Arthur's losing his mind in a hut in the back of the village. So they're at this party and they dance and Lancelot like arranges for all these flowers to fall and it's her birthday and it's adorable
He's so
and
smooth. Oh,
yeah,
man.
oh, he is very smooth. And Guinevere is like in this scene, she's kind of admirable. She's like, listen, I appreciate your advances. My husband's kind of going through a rough period right now. He kind of has been since he got the sword from the stone. I'm trying to be loyal to him. Like, and that's admirable. She's doing the right thing, but she's also very hurt and confused by Arthur's actions. And so he kind of comes out and he figures out that he needs to find where he can find the dagger. But he wants to go by himself. He's like, I don't want anyone to come with me, including you, Lancelot. I just want to go and get this for myself. So Lancelot and Guinevere are like, nah, you're going crazy. We're going to try and get to the dagger first. And what they do is they take the gauntlet, which we saw last season, with the Queens of Darkness in that one episode. And they use it to go find you use it to go find someone's greatest weakness, so that way you can use it against them, basically, is the point of this thing, or how Rumple used it. And when Guinevere takes it, she realizes that the dagger is Arthur's greatest weakness, not his greatest strength, like he originally thinks it is, which makes sense because it's literally driving him to madness. So Lancelot and her go off to the vault, and now this is where I had some trouble with things is when they run into Rumpelstiltskin. So let's just say what happens first in the vault. They get to the Dark One's vault and they unlock it. They go downstairs and they find that there's like this big, slimy, like dark thing that attacks Lancelot. And it kind of looks like when the Dark One's spirit was kind of just free floating and doing whatever at that time period. Before it took over Emma, and it kind of attacks Lancelot, and Guinevere shoves a torch at it, like using light to get rid of darkness. Nice play on that whole concept there. And the darkness kind of like shrieks and goes away. And Lancelot is like, oh my God, thank you, whatever. They kiss. It's adorable. She's like, that'll never happen again. Great. Now, when that happened, do you think that the darkness did something to Lancelot? Because I really do.
That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I could be reading too much into it, but I kind of felt that there was like it's very subtle, but I felt like there was like a slight shift in something. Something wasn't right after that.
I mean, Possibly, but I didn't necessarily think, oh my gosh, he's going to be evil. You know what I mean? Because he willingly, after everything, after Guinevere kissing him, he didn't really push the issue with her. He let her trade the Merlin's gauntlet, or whatever it was called, the glove. And when they got back, he willingly left her. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't know if it's evil against her. I don't know what it could
be. No, but I feel like if he was meant to be bad, that some of those things would have tempted him to be different. Do you know what I mean?
I would feel like if evil was going to use him, they would use him in the most obvious way, which would be for him to try and take Guinevere or in some way lure her away from Arthur. Like, at that point, I feel like that would be the obvious play.
Yeah, that's kind of what I felt like, too.
I mean, I'm not saying anyone's right or wrong. That's what I got from it. You guys got something different. That's cool. That's awesome. I hope he does get a little evil, because I feel like he could pull it off.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I could handle that.
Evil poor Karen. Poor Karen. Her whole King Arthur journey is not okay at this point.
Oh, he'll be okay. But this is where I have the timeline issue. So this is supposedly 5 or so years ago. This is when Rumple gets the gauntlet, which means that this is right before the scene in the library where Belle is like, hey, where'd you get this thing? And he's like, oh, on a journey to Camelot. And she's like, you've been to Camelot? Blah, 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 blah. But that would mean, I read Belle's complete timeline on the wiki page today, that the Queens of Darkness, Rumple meeting Gaston, Hook coming after Belle, all of that had to happen between, like, that, this trade, and when the first curse happens, because the first curse didn't happen yet. So the first curse could, it did technically happen, like, what, 5 or so years ago? If in Once Upon a Time, because it's only season 5, so it's like 5-ish years, maybe longer. Like, they could be off by a little bit here. But my biggest thing is that when Belle goes to work, like, well, it's taken by Rumple, she's in the dungeon, then she comes upstairs and she's, like, helping out about around the house. It is after that, like, it's only a short while before that time period that she runs into Anna and has the hat. And that is when Arendelle's not frozen yet, and Arendelle was frozen for 30 years. So, and then it thawed in present day now. So there's like this whole 30-year time period where I'm just not sure how many events could have happened in between them getting the gauntlet, which was only supposed to be 5 years ago, and like that was not like 25 years after she met Anna and was still working, like, you know, just about to meet Rumple. Like, it wasn't like, you know, 25 years from when she met Rumple until she met Anna. Or met Anna, then met Rumple. Sorry, I have to switch them. I don't know. I feel like there's a huge time gap here. I could be wrong. I only spent 35 minutes on it. I feel like I need to spend a year. But that's what I came up with. I'm going to take a picture of these notes and post it to the Twitter, because it's really intense.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I honestly didn't pay any attention to the timeline.
Well, the gauntlet just annoyed me, because it was such like a thing last season where we were like, oh my God, Camelot. And then I'm like, oh, it's being used here. But then Rumple, this is when he receives it. So that sent me into a spiral of how this timeline works, because then when I was figuring out all the Twitter stuff, someone had mentioned like, how did that only happen 5 years ago? And like, what was Rumple doing as the Dark One in Storybrooke 5 years ago? And I'm like, well, I kind of aligned that to the curse, like almost just happening. And then I was like, oh, but wait, all of these other events needed to come after that. And I feel like it's just too short of a time frame. If any listener knows what's going on, please let me know, because this will drive me crazy for the rest of the year.
I mean, I honestly, do you think there is an answer? Do you think that they really have that intensive notes on the timeline? Like, I mean, it's,
I don't know if they do. A fan somewhere out in the world does.
Oh, I'm sure, but I'm wondering, like, is it even going to add up?
Oh, no, definitely not. And I'm fine with it not completely adding up, But I'm pissed that they made made a point of saying that they were frozen in Arendelle for 30 years. If that didn't happen, this would all make sense.
But I think they made them frozen for 30 years to make Anna and Elsa still being the same age as Emma work. Because that's why they did that.
But then they shouldn't. I don't think they should have introduced Anna to Belle.
Right. I can see where that doesn't match up. Yeah.
I mean, but then again, there could be some time. There could have been a curse somewhere down the line that froze time. You never know with these people. So
yeah. What actually ended up bothering me, which is the stupidest thing, is that when we went to Arthur's past, it was a very long time ago or many years ago or whatever. It said, I was like, yeah, vague much. You guys are starting to have trouble keeping your timeline straight.
Yeah.
If Eddie and Adam have a timeline somewhere, I want a picture. I want to see them doing the homework that everyone else is doing, because seriously.
I know. I mean, I had much better things to be working on and doing today, but I got really into it. And then I looked up and I'm like, you cannot spend any more than 40 minutes on this. Oh my gosh, stop it. But I read a lot of great things and it reminded me of all the good episodes, when Hook and Belle were going at each other's throats. I really liked all that. I was like, oh, all right, that happened and that happened. But I had to be careful not to go back and watch episodes because I was like, no, you're going to fall down a rabbit hole here. But since that's only bothering me, I'll create my own Once Upon a Time podcast where it's just about the timeline and drive myself insane.
And the family tree.
And the family. Oh, that would be a good.
Yeah, the family tree is cray. I don't even.
I know. If we reveal some sort of familial connection to Camelot, I'm out.
If somehow Violet is tied into the family line, we're screwed. So, yeah.
Oh, gosh. But, yeah, so the whole point of the gauntlet is that Rumpel convinces Guinevere to trade the gauntlet for the sand from the shores of Avalon, which we're probably going to visit at some point very soon. I'm thinking they keep kind of dropping hints about it. But Avalon is this island where that's where the Lady of the Lake is. That's where Excalibur was forged. That's where Arthur's sister, Morgan Le Fay, is. And that it's known for their apples because no one ever has to farm because it's like an eternal paradise. So in some legends, the Lady of the Lake is Arthur's sister. I was reading about all this today, too. But yeah, what did you guys think of what this sand can do? So the sand basically fixes things and makes them appear whole. So Rumpel was telling Guinevere, just shake some of this on the sword. It'll look like it's whole. And then, Arthur will be back to normal, basically. But as you know, with Rumpel, not everything is what it seems. So what did we think of this new sand?
Well, I think the sand is a great kind of ploy in order for Arthur to truly show who he is and how desperate he is to fulfill a prophecy that so far only he really knows about. So I think it's really interesting how the sand works. And I think it kind of allows for them to play a little bit with why things are the way that they are and we don't understand it. I didn't understand why Guinevere was talking so horribly about Lancelot. When she and David cross paths and she's like, well, Lancelot's alive. I hate Lancelot. He's a terrible person and what he did to me. And I was like, well, what on earth could Lancelot have done to Guinevere? In reality, he didn't do anything to her except Arthur planted the seed in there of what it should be. And so I kind of think the sand is cool and I like the way it plays. One thing to note is that when we were at New York Comic Con and they were on the panel, they said that we would not be seeing Morgan Le Fay. So even if they do go to Avalon, that we will not be seeing her.
That's well, that too bad.
Up that question.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's, I mean, the Lady of the Lake in some legends is Morgan Le Fay, so maybe they could just do both as one. Not say
Didn't
it's her.
We already have the Lady of the Lake?
Yeah, in a way. It wasn't I looked this up earlier and I forget what it was. I think Kristen knows a lot more about the past of Once Upon a Time than I will ever remember. But what did she do? She was around. I'm going to look it up again.
The mermaid? Yeah,
the
I was going to say, you talk
right?
about the...
Yeah.
They needed the water to heal Sleeping Beauty's Philip? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
That version of the Lady in the Lake.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how that ties into Arthurian legend, because I'm not as well-versed, but, I mean, she was clearly, like, a lady of a lake, so...
Yeah, because, like, because Lancelot's in that episode, too.
Yeah.
She's just the generic version.
Well, I mean, you can't just get away with saying the Lady of the Lake. Like, I mean, come on.
Well, I think they might have wanted to... Oh, wait, this says that, because the name of the episode is The Lady of the Lake, and it says, although the episode is named for the supernatural character from the Arthurian legend, the actual Lady of the Lake does not appear in this episode. She's mentioned indirectly when Lancelot says he was raised by a lake. So.
What now?
So this is a different lady?
This is a different lady.
That's super interesting. Okay. Good to know.
So yeah, at least as far as season two, with an episode with Lancelot, she was not actually seen. But then I'm trying to think of who that character was.
You mean she could have been just a siren? Like we didn't really get to know that character. We just saw what she was capable of.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not like she was ever named or ever became a vital part of the story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The biggest part of her being in the episode was that David defeated her to save Philip, which saved him from having to marry what's her face.
Yep. I now I'm with you. Yeah. All right. Well,
I do have to say about this Avalon sand, which is how we started on this.
Yes.
I like the fact that it's clearly mentioned that it makes things appear to be whole. And for one reason or another, I think it's all going to come back to bite Arthur in the ass. And I'm just waiting for it, because like this whole Guinevere thing, like it really bothered me that he used it on her. Like, more than anything else he did in this episode, him using the sand to make her be on his side just seems like such a betrayal. And so I'm really hoping that this whole appearance of things being okay means that Guinevere, while she's acting like she is on his side and everything, maybe in her head knows what's being done and that this isn't really her, like this isn't really how she feels.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I agree. When he used it on her, not even so much the kingdom, but her, like, because you see that first, obviously. But I was like, oh, no, this works on people, too. And that's a really interesting way to use it to make their marriage that was broken seem whole. I thought that was like it was a genius writing plot, but like an awful thing to give to Arthur. But yeah, that kind of brought me to like that final question of like, what do we think of Guinevere now? Cause I didn't like Guinevere up until this point, because like we were saying, like it didn't make sense as to why she was like, I thought she had some other sort of like plot going on for herself where she was going to go against Arthur. And then like, you know, when she was like so angry about Lancelot, I was like, I don't know what's going on with her, but I don't like her. But now that she's under this spell, I want to know what she's like when she's not under the spell, you know? And does that spell carry over to Storybrooke?
I think it does, because the times that we've seen her at least once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she seemed very much still to be with Arthur.
Yeah, and she did ask about, like, where's Excalibur and stuff like that, so I feel like her mind is still very set on, like, oh, this is where we were when we left.
Right. But see, here's the thing, and this is the one thing that I think is confusing or I need to know more about, is that Arthur clearly makes the statement that his Camelot is ruined and that they need to make Storybrooke their new Camelot, but they need to get rid of everyone in it first, basically, so that they can build their own Camelot again. So is his Camelot ruined because someone saw through the spell?
I don't know.
Emma, like, figure it out? Because clearly by the end of the episode, we see that Arthur has used the sand on Charming and Snow. So now they're in a different mindset as well. And so I feel like Emma finally, or someone figured it out. And by them figuring it out, the whole of Camelot fell, because they could see through the facade that was there.
Yeah, but he also doesn't remember the 6 weeks. So in his mind, it would have been them getting there for the first time. So I don't know how much he actually knows about Camelot, like, you know, where we are right now in Camelot. I don't think he knows any of what has happened. Or the fact that, because, like, he doesn't even know that David was put on the round table. You know what I mean? Like, all of those relationships have started fresh again.
Do you think he doesn't know, or do you think it's part of an act?
That was going to be my next question, is could he be just putting on an act, though?
Because I feel like he is the person who could have enacted the curse.
Yeah, he definitely could have.
I strongly feel like he's the one who did it. Or, to throw a whole big wrench in the works, it could have been this Lancelot that's turned evil that enacted the curse to get revenge on Arthur for the Guinevere thing. I don't know.
Or he could have dispelled this. Oh, this is, I just came up with this. So if it doesn't work out, let me know, like timeline wise or anything else wise. Maybe whatever sand spell had broken by the time, or like Guinevere snapped out of it or something, and he made her crush Lancelot's heart to enact the curse and get them to a new Camelot.
That's what I was thinking, because we haven't seen Lancelot.
Awful. I'm sorry, Karen. I'm so sorry. We're just killing off Lancelot.
Yeah, this is, you know, we already lost him once. Why do we have to lose him again?
And he came back and we were all like, yay, Lancelot's back. And now we're like, no, his heart is totally crushed.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I mean, it makes the most sense right now. With what we know right now, it makes the most sense.
He's the only one really missing.
Yeah. And Guinevere could have been the one to enact the curse after finding out what Arthur did. And she crushed Lancelot's heart because maybe he volunteered it and said, you know, like, I don't want this for you. Or something like that. I don't know.
And then when they all showed up in Storybrooke, Arthur's like, oh, right, well, I can't never go home. My kingdom's, like, destroyed there. But I have this kind of fresh start here, and I'm just going to make a new Camelot here with Guinevere and Lancelot's completely out of the picture.
Mm. Aww. I don't want it to be the truth. Yeah. So I need to find Lancelot.
that'll be very, very interesting. So we kind of end on that note with Mary Margaret and David being under the spell of the sand, and they go to Regina, and Regina's like, I'm just sitting here. The boy and his mom and Hook are gone, and I'm just here with Robin, which, don't get me wrong, is fine, but I would like some company and an update on what's going on. So they come in and they're like, no, chill. We can totally trust Arthur, and we have to do whatever he says. Hopefully Regina is smart enough to see through this by the beginning of next week's episode, because I don't like seeing Snow and David so, like, they're brainwashed, and I don't like it. I don't like it.
No, but I feel
they just,
like,
need to do something super out of character. Like, yes, something will happen that they will not act like themselves, and it'll give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Regina's smarter than that.
Exactly. Yeah, she even, like, had this kind of, like, look on her face, like, really? We're going to trust him now after all of that? So,
right, and she's like, I just hit it. What are you talking about? Like, I don't understand.
So we'll see where that goes. What else do we have to talk about under here? So Lancelot, when he gets captured in Camelot, he is taken to the dungeon. And while he's down there, there's this other voice coming from a cell that's adjacent to his. And she's kind of saying, like, hey, if you're an enemy of Lancelot's, if you're an enemy of Arthur's and you're a friend of mine, and we see that it's Merida. So Merida clearly got into some sort of trouble with Arthur, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what that trouble is.
I was thinking, I don't remember the exact...
Her brothers? I'm sorry, is that the person that took her brothers?
That's what my question was Camelot the kingdom she was sort of battling against?
Yeah, it could very well be, because Emma, like, really only said, I have to find Merlin, not I'm going, like, you know, like, I don't think she ever specifically said Camelot, and maybe, oh, but maybe after Merida got the Will of the Wisp, she found out that she was also looking for Camelot, you know, because she didn't know exactly where she was going. She needed the Will of the Wisp to lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe her brothers got, like, recruited into Arthur's crazy army or something like that. That would be interesting. I would like to see, I know her father has since died at the end of Brave, but I'd like to see what's up with her family and her brothers and what that mythology is like a little bit more. But for now, we have her captured in Camelot and in Storybrooke. So Emma, we get maybe a minute and a half of Storybrooke this week. And it's just Emma holding a... Oh, we'll go back to Henry at the end of this. I don't know how I completely forgot about it. I kept, like, tiptoeing around it because I wanted to devote so much time to it. And then I was like, oh, we're done with the episode. We didn't talk about it. So Emma is back in Storybrooke, and she is with Gold. And she's like, basically, here's what's going to happen. You're, like, a clean slate, and I'm going to make you into a hero. No one is sure how that's going to happen. Rumple's kind of like, oh, I can still feel what it was like to be the Dark One. Like, I don't know if anyone can change, whatever. He's just whining. He's kind of slipping back into his cowardice thing, which is a little annoying, but at least he's not evil.
I'd rather him be evil. I hate this plot line. So dumb.
You know what? I'm glad that we have the other Rumple still kind of kicking around, so that we get that balance. Like, it's not just all coward Rumple.
The crazy Rumple. I love it. Even if it's a figment of her imagination, at least we get him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I've been so satisfied with him being around that, like, Gold being in a coma or whatever was wrong with him, I was like, that's fine with me. Like, I always prefer the crazy Rumple over Gold any day. But yeah, so we're still not really sure how she plans to do this, but it involves Merida and her movie namesake, which I don't know about you guys. Massive eye roll for me.
I kind of loved it.
Oh, I wasn't like, okay. So what happens is Emma takes Merida's heart again and instructs her to get her bow and arrow. And like, she's like, I need you to make him brave. And I'm like, Okay.
All it needed was the Sarah Bareilles song in the background. Yes. And it would have been all set.
Would have been perfect. my God. Yes. If any of you listeners are good with, like, the YouTube fan videos, make it happen.
Please. Please.
I'd watch that on repeat all day. yeah. So what do we think that she's going to do, like, with Merida, because I have no idea, which is kind of a good thing. I like being surprised, but I just literally have no guesses for this.
Well, she wants Merida to, like, train him to be a hero. Like, if you watch, like, Merida's literally like, no, come on, you can fight, you have to fight, you must. And she's, like, teaching him how to fight and, like, making him fight her.
Oh, I didn't watch the preview, so that's probably a problem.
Oh, well, I didn't. There you go. That's what's going to happen.
All right. Well, there you have it. I did not watch the preview. I switched the channel to HBO. Yeah. So, yeah, that's a thing that's going to happen at that time, that she's going to train him. Okay. So, yeah, that works. That's a good guess.
Let's go talk about Hook.
All right. So, settle in, folks, for the Hook and Emma Variety Hour. So we're in Camelot, and Emma is being haunted by Rumple, and, you know, we saw that clip that came out earlier this week, and she can't get him out of her head. So Hook's like, I got an idea. Let's set up a distraction. Like, you need to be distracted. You need to not be thinking about Rumple. Like, you cannot keep making your mind go back there. You have to, like, get your heart racing and do all this stuff. So she, Henry, and Hook leave because Henry knows a place that they can go. Turns out to be Violet's stable, where she keeps her horses, and her, like, family, I guess, works or owns, or it's on the property somewhere. And Henry has a cute little crush. Hook is messing with him. And then Hook eventually takes Emma out on the horse, and he's just like, don't worry about the horse trusting you. You have to only worry about me trusting you. Everyone sobs tears of joy and laughter. And then they go horseback riding, and then they start making out in a field of flowers, and she doesn't have visions of Rumple anymore. Let's discuss how adorable Hook was for the rest of the episode.
Can we just talk about the Henry, Hook, and Emma moment?
I just wanted to rush through everything that we had.
Right there.
You can go back and talk about whatever part of
it. Right. As we've already discussed, if I could make that my, like, quote of the week, that would be it. But, you know, a gift set will do just fine for me. If anyone's got one of those, please feel free to send that along to us. We do love those. I don't know. I loved it. It made it feel so normal. It's a very family thing to do. You know what I mean? When you see your, you know, son or daughter or your brother or sister's, like, crush or new boyfriend or girlfriend, it's kind of like a moment. It's a thing. At least in my family it is, man. If you're bringing somebody home, you better be prepared because the family is going to have at it. So I think that for them, this was like such a normal thing, and Hook was just killing it. And Emma was kind of like, wait, I don't know what to do with this. And I was like, I'm not like, Emma was clearly not okay, but at the same time, it was cool. But she was just like, he lied and I don't understand. Like, so I just love the whole dynamic of that scene. Cause even though Emma's becoming the dark one, she's still Emma. She's still a mom. And I think that that was, like, the most delightful part of that whole scene was that you kind of just got those family dynamics that were normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hook's little perma smirk thing didn't, you know, hurt at all either. Like, you could see the smirk on his face even when you couldn't see his mouth. Like, just his eyes above the wall. Like, you could see how happy he was to be watching little Henry, like, getting his game on. Like, it was so freaking cute. Yeah. And we needed it because this Arthur storyline is so, like, crazy.
Yeah, it really broke up the episode, too, which was great. And Henry just being able to, like, have a plan, too. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, oh, you know, like, I'm grown up now. I've been going off on my own and hanging out with this girl a lot, you know. Just so you know, guys, still here, still doing my thing, kicking butt at being a teen right now. But yeah, he brings them over there and then he still goes out riding. But yes, Hook's face was so good throughout this whole thing. It was almost like, so some of my favorite moments in like anything to do with the Muppets are just when they look around with their mouth wide open and he just looked like a Muppet, like just so like overly emotive and excited. Oh, it was so, so, so great. And I did love the whole purpose of them leaving was to get Emma away from being so isolated. Like, she needed to be around people and be constantly distracted. Like, they couldn't just leave her in that room making dream catchers, which are going to be important next week. The episode is named Dream Catcher. But yeah, she's sitting there with her own thoughts the whole time, and she really needs that break. But how long can you keep that up? I mean,
yeah, like I loved the look of like wonder on her face. He gets out there, gets off the horse, and is like, he's gone. Like she couldn't believe it. She could not believe that Hook was able to help her get away from him, but it worked. Like, it was a really, really nice moment because we know what happens to Emma. We know, you know, in present day what exactly is going on between them. So it's a nice little moment to know that not everything since she was possessed by the darkness has been absolute, like, awful. Like, they have had a few moments here and there where the real Emma is still very much present.
Yeah, unlike our Storybrooke plot where she's kind of gone, except for that one, like, we had that very, very, very little moment where she's, like, kind of, like, twirling the flower. Like, you know, so there are these little tiny things that are so deeply buried, but I don't think she's really recognizing them. Like, in this case, she needs a distraction from the dark one, you know, like, but the distraction has to be so strong. Like, it's not going to be a horseback ride anymore.
Yeah.
So it really does show how much of a struggle it is for her to get the dark one out of her head and to try and move on. And once she has gone that far down, like, it's going to take something really drastic to get her back out of it. As we've seen, Hook is really kind of helpless right now. So maybe we'll get a little bit more of our bromance next week with our, you know, thief and our pirate fighting to help Emma back in Storybrooke. I'm excited to return to Storybrooke for a little bit. I really love Dark Emma, so looking forward to that. But yeah, any final thoughts on Hook's face or otherwise? Again, Karen, sorry we killed Camelot.
That's okay.
Basically killed all of Camelot in this episode.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why I'm so invested, but apparently I am. So, but yeah, Hook's face is good. Everything's a innuendo with him because he was like, we just need to get on the horse and ride and something about getting your heart beating. And I was like, oh God, Hook, just stop talking. This is getting embarrassing.
Yeah. And when he was like, well, now that we're alone, I'm like, now that we're alone, what? Now that we're alone, what?
And cut to black.
Yeah. I was like, no. All right. So next week we have episode 5. I just said the title is Dreamcatcher. I was just going to say, I have no idea what it's called, but it's called Dreamcatcher. Eddie and Adam have confirmed that it has nothing to do with, like, Neil is not coming back. Nobody get excited. Not that kind of dream catcher.
At least they made that clear. It's like, guys, I'm sorry.
I think it came, they had to like make a special announcement to one of the news outlets, like right after Adam did one of his, like, you know, here's a script tease and like, here's episode 5's title. Like, you know, it was like the end of the summer and everyone was like, Dreamcatcher! Neil!
Oh my God! Yeah.
Like, no. Sorry.
Not to get your hopes up, but no.
Yeah.
No.
So unfortunately, he will not be back, but we will be here to figure out what the importance of the Dreamcatcher is, which is kind of like, you know, keeping bad thoughts out of your head, but they don't seem to be working with Emma, which makes sense as to why she was covering her walls with them, trying to get Rumple to stay out, but he wasn't having it, and Jen just sent us a bunch of gifts, so I can't.
Yeah, they are so beautiful. The things he can do, the things that he says with that single eyebrow just amazes me.
Like, especially when we had last season, when they went on their date and he just sits across the table from her and just, like, is, like, looking up. I just don't understand how that happened or how he is a person who exists. I don't get it. His wife is very, very lucky. Anyway, let's wrap this up so we could talk about this offline. So yeah, that's it. We'll be back next week to discuss our non-Neil dream catchers. And until then, I am Brittany.
I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.